Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to Whence Came You. This is episode number 419. In the news this week, not a whole lot going on, with the exception of course, I'm actually recording this on Halloween night, 2019, and this is the last night that Levi Banker will be open. And by the time you guys listen to this episode, the shop is gone, closed. BuyBankersBest.com is no more. Everything will be sold out. I went ahead and made my last order today. I got some Grove shampoo and some mustache wax. And it's a bummer, but Brother Levi is going to be doing some amazing new things in the future, so just wish him well. If you see him on social media or you converse with him regularly, let him know that you really appreciate everything he's done for Masonry with his product line and also for producing this program. He was a producer for a long time through the works at Banker's Best, so just want to say thank you one last time to Brother Levi. If you're listening to this on Sunday night, awesome. How about Monday morning? Cooler yet? You're getting very close to the reveal of the next speaker at MasonicCon Chicago. So if you want to know who those people are, we basically have an email list, and you will sign up, and then every 2 weeks I release a speaker, and that speaker goes out to the email list on an unlisted YouTube video. And then a week after that, it gets released to the public. Now, the benefit is, of course, by being on the email list, you're getting the information first, and everybody else has to wait. Another benefit is, of course, if you're on the email list, you will get $15 off when tickets go on sale for the first week. But you got to subscribe to do that. You're going to want to go to MasonicConChicago.com. and get on that email list. We'll have another speaker announced this Tuesday. That'll be for the public on social media. Everybody who has the email already knows who that person is. Then, coming up in just a few weeks, we've got some big surprises coming. We've got our prices worked out. Tickets are going to go on sale in December. So we'll see what happens. But I really hope you guys consider checking that out. This week on the show, I've actually got a real treat, you guys. It's not often we get an author to read some of his work. It's also not often that when an author does that, he also produces audio because, you know, he's an audiophile like myself. He is a musician like myself. Who do you think that could be? That's right. Brother Jamie Paul Lamb is on the program this week. And he's going to do a reading of one of his latest papers for you, and it's so awesome. So get ready for that. And I've also got a piece that was submitted to me from a listener of the show that I think we're going to read also. We also have illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison on the program this week, so we've got a fantastic program for you to kick off November. I know, it's November. Wow. It's Halloween Day here in Chicagoland, and we got our first snow, and it was wet and sloshy and pretty darn amazing. It was a good first snow. All the kids are outside playing and everything, so I hope you guys all had a good Halloween, and I hope you didn't get snow, because as cool as it is, it's a bummer when you can't dress up for Halloween because you're covered in layers. Yeah. Anyway, let's pay the bills. Now comes the point in the show where I ask you to help support this show. How do we do that? Well, we have a bunch of different ways to do that today. If you head on over to WCYpodcast.com, you can click on direct donation through PayPal. Of course, you can make that one-time donation, or you can sign up to be a monthly contributor. Contributing $2 a month, $5, or even $10 a month, whatever you choose, really helps the program out. Of course, we have a limited edition shop where you can pick up any number of items that come direct from us. help us out by going to MasonicRevival.com, but also we have some other affiliates that are really important. We also have a code with Onnit. You can go to our website, click on More, then go to Onnit, and you can click through any of the links here, or just go to Onnit.com and use the promo code WCY at checkout. You'll get 10% off, and they'll send a little bit back to the program to help us out. And of course, it's business time. The book that I wrote with John T. Ruart, it is making some real waves, and people are using it and seeing success. So check that out on Amazon. You can click right to it. You can get it on Audible, Kindle, or in print, even on iBooks. And last but not least, I want to ask you to check out the Great Books program. You'll see the banner for it on the left-hand side, Intellectual Linear Progression. Use the promo code WCY, or you can just click on that link there, and you'll actually go right to the website and hear a little bit from Scott Hambrick about how awesome the program is. So that's it. I hope you guys enjoy, and thank you so much for helping us out. All right, let's get into this week's first piece. This is a reading of a paper that I was sent, and it's by Brother J. Clint Louie from Edmond Lodge number 37 in Edmond, Oklahoma, right here in the United States. And his paper is called The Five Elements and Five Sciences. So here we go. Freemasonry and Masonic Symbolism. In Freemasonry, there always seems to be a rhythm or correlation with any number of things. It seems to nearly never fail for the craft to line up with all things hermetic, Kabbalistic, mystical, or beyond. Whether or not modern ancient craft masonry came from ancient knowledge found prior to antiquity is a subject of debate. However, it does typically fall right into place with it and is unquestionably related. As we were passed through the degrees of masonry, we were introduced to esoteric numerical studies and were explained some of their meanings. As we travel through the pillars, we begin to ascend the flight of winding stairs. We first come upon the three steps, which have an infinite amount of explanation based on the number three. However, we are taught they primarily represent the three main offices of the junior warden, senior warden, and worshipful master. As we continue along, we come upon a set of five steps, along with the five orders of architecture. Each one represents one of our five primary senses. They are labeled hearing, seeing, feeling, smelling, and tasting. We are taught, in one particular degree, to primarily focus on the first three. But as searches of further light, there is usually a way to correlate similarities with numbers in masonry and beyond. These five senses are what we utilize to study the seven liberal arts we are later introduced to in the lesson. In some of the more esoteric Masonic and non-Masonic groups, we are introduced to the four primary elements of the Hermetic and Kabbalistic sciences. They are earth, water, air, and fire. While many other teachings, such as Eastern religions, utilize the same and different elements, I will stick with what our Masonic-related groups teach. Based upon my initiatory experiences with some research, I found that there is a less-known fifth element, or quintessence. According to Dr. Israel Regardi, the fifth element of spirit crowns and connects the other four. This is a culmination of all the elements. One primary difference with this element is that it cannot stand alone as the others do. It is essential that the other four elements are present and in alignment have an understanding of the fifth element. As receivers of light often found in the Blue Lodge, but more often overlooked and beyond, we are encouraged to learn and become familiar with numerology. In some of the first lessons taught, we are informed of the many meanings of different numbers, but specifically, here, the number five. In one of our degrees, as mentioned above, the number five is alluded to in regards to the five senses and five pillars. And we are taught that when we are fully in sync with ourselves and surroundings, we can get by without any of our senses, spiritually speaking. In Masonry, the five senses are much needed. Touch, whereby one Mason may know another in the dark as well as the light. Sight, utilized whereby we may see certain signs of recognition given to us, or symbols as well. Hearing, to hear the word of a brother Mason. to also hear music as part of some lodge's ritual. Taste, to rejoice among brethren in fellowship with fine food and drink. Smell, when we have our ceremonial incense burning in lodge to help center our minds and bodies. Air and healing. In some Masonic traditions, the element of air is represented as intelligence and or spiritual growth as well. During the creation days, it was God that breathed into a man's nostrils and made us in his likeness. With air travels sound. From our time in the womb to our last moments on earth, we primarily hear sound through the air. Also through the air is played one liberal art that is perhaps the most recognizable, and it is that of music. Hearing in Masonry and other ritualistic orders is perhaps the primary means of communication. Whether whispering good counsel or carefully scripted, deeply esoteric lines of ritual, the sound traveling in the air to our ears to be heard is everywhere. Air being represented by the East, it is from the East we receive most of our Masonic lessons. We are given our obligation from the East and admonished as well as other communications. The sense of hearing and air go hand in hand with gaining knowledge and spiritual growth. It is not so much to simply say certain words, but to forcefully vibrate them out as to really push the sound waves through the air. As with our sense of smell, we often never see any of the day-to-day things we hear. From car horns and ambulances to other people's conversations, the air is filled with constant sounds. Perhaps no phenomenon in nature is as common and powerful as air. It is a driving force and a symbol of determination. In nature, windstorms, tornadoes, and hurricanes have no rivals except themselves in destructive power. These forces of air carry with them thunder, howling winds, and crashing noises of destruction. Air can also be gentle, cooling, and bring in clouds of life-supporting rain. It can tenderly blow a wind chime or be pushed through a musical horn or woodwind to produce beautiful sound. If harnessed correctly and brought under control, it can carefully steer a sailboat, generate energy, or lift a 700,000-pound 747 jet airliner. Air can blow out fires, dry up water, and shift the earth. As Masons or students of the Hermetic sciences, when we hear the winds coming, it is necessary to be able to harness and control these opportunities of learning something new or growing spiritually. Fire and smell. In the Masonic tradition, the element of fire is a symbol of life and destruction. In the winter solstice ceremony for Masonry, it is symbolic of creation and energy, a new beginning in life. In tarot and other studies, fire is represented as passion and change, whether good or bad. In alchemy, fire is often associated with sulfur, one of the most potent and distinct-smelling chemicals on planet Earth. Fire is represented in the south, the opposite of the cold, dark north. In Masonry, as mentioned previously, one of the senses less talked about is that of smell. Smell is often one of the first senses to be activated during certain situations. It is also one that could be considered quite subconscious. Yet if something triggers your sense of smell enough, it can be one of the most difficult to ignore. When fire is created, we usually smell it far before we see it, hear it, or feel it. Whether literally or figuratively, we often sense the smell of smoke, that all too recognizable smell of sulfur, or worse yet, the smell of death. On the other hand, fire and smell can have positive meanings as well. The culinary arts, we often smell what we are going to be eating before we ever see or taste it. As with fire, our sense of smell senses a sign of new beginnings, love and passion, physical attraction towards pheromones or another, or the very familiar smell of a newborn baby. Our sense of smell often allows us to sense what is beyond our other senses, even hearing. It can also be right in front of us, as we stop and smell the flowers, as to live in the moment. As mentioned above, you can smell fire miles away and know that there is likely danger and destruction, but you can be rest assured it is also a new beginning in the making as well. Water and taste. In the Masonic tradition, the element of water is represented as emotion and intuition. And according to Cicero, it has creative, subconscious, or mysterious qualities. As for taste, having good taste is perhaps all of these things. It is that natural ability to make good choices, react accordingly, without thinking. It is also the ability to see beauty, and everyone else in the room would likely agree. It is a subconscious ability to have a positive awareness of what everyone else likely should see or does see in something. Having those water qualities means you are fluidic, in that not only do you have good decision-making abilities, but that you also can adapt and see the hidden beauty in most everything. As Masons, we should have the ability to be fluid in most scenarios. If we are demanding to be free and accepted ourselves, we must also be accepting of others as well. As Masons, we are curious about the ancient mysteries, both esoteric and exoteric. From the West is water, and fittingly so, as it slows the fires of our minds for rest. The West is where the sun sets every day. The search for more light from the East is then allowed to be pondered and meditated over. As water is passive and feminine, it is utilized best as a time to contemplate those fiery desires for knowledge. One tradition that has been long forgotten in our day-to-day lives of traffic, work, and fast food is the slow consumption of our foods. As a whole, we eat more than ever in the history of mankind, yet we enjoy our food less than we ever have. We often miss the taste of every nuance in a fine dish we are eating, and therefore, that likely reflects on our lives for the most part. We tend to not let our minds wander into its subconscious due to the busy schedules. If we are missing those moments, it's likely due to bad taste. Earth and touch. In the Masonic tradition, the element of earth is represented as grounding, stabilization, or material. This is the element often looked at as the element that really houses all of the aforementioned elements. The earth element is the basis of knowledge, things learned which allow for further spontaneous, passionate, or fire, logical air, or emotional water abilities in our mind and spirit. It is our day-to-day life. It is what we can see, smell, hear, taste, and most importantly, touch. Being earthbound, in a philosophical way, is a less than desirable way to grow spiritually. However, it is the earth element and our physical beings that essentially make us up. While water can be touched and even held, it is more fluid and will change immediately. As for earth qualities, it is malleable, but not as much as air, and water is nowhere near as inspired as fire. The earth is under our feet and is all we can touch. Earth is represented from the cold north. It is also represented with the color black, and therefore represents our lack of quote-unquote light. We are too concerned about gadgets, money, and other items we must have in our possessions in order to be anywhere other than in the complete darkness. While it is the earth element that houses the others and is the basis for our growth, it is a virtue to have the stability underneath us. It is the basis for all Masons to be physically born in darkness and to have put away our possessions we hold closely to us. We are even asked at one point to deposit a physical metal item for archival reasons into our lodges. This helps us be able to give something up of a physical nature. Being grounded to the earth, to a fault, can be a problem. As we can feel earthquakes underneath our feet if our earth below us is toiling, so should we feel the earthquakes within ourselves if we are toiling inside. The toiling is often what pushes us toward any number of belief systems or to even begin our journey into Masonry. It is important to understand the positive and negative of the earth element, as it can keep us from ever growing, but always allows our acacia to grow. Spirit and sight. In the Masonic tradition, the element of spirit is a symbol of purity, and is, more or less, a culmination of all of the other four elements. It is typically less spoken about or even recognized by many students of the ancient mysteries. It is so invisible. It is less visible than air itself, yet as Masons, we are constantly looking for it. It is nowhere yet everywhere. It is made up of all four elements, yet none of them are specifically it. Spirit can also be called quintessence or the ether as well. Its similarity to air is relevant since air is represented in the East, the place we are constantly traveling. As seekers of light, It is sight that we use most literally, but figuratively as well. From the dawn of man until now, we have peered into the skies, pondering questions of our existence. From worshiping the sun and moon or looking into the heavens for God's answers, we are constantly looking for light or spirit. As humans with sight, we often have to see it to believe it. As seekers, we know we won't see it with our physical eyes, but with our wisdom and studies. Some believe the third eye concept, which allows for deeper meditation and understanding of things around us. As we bow our heads and pray, we usually close our eyes. This is most likely due to the closing off of our ability to actually see, but utilize more of our inner sight. In Masonic lodges, we are ceremoniously given light, more light, and further light by having our hoodwinks removed, having a requirement to believe in a higher power, a grand architect of the universe. This ritual alludes to the great light. To our ancestors, it may have simply been the sun. To us, it could be a multitude of belief systems. If all things are of the ether element, then on an earthly level, we see and detect signs from a universe such as numerology and things we often call coincidental. We use our sight to gain more knowledge that can be transferred into logic and wisdom. My studies have led me to believe that in Lodge, the spirit is represented in the middle of the room. The other elements are represented directionally, but not spirit. As indicated in specific grades of at least one appendant body of masonry, our spirits are positioned in a place of no direction but all directions facing the east looking for light. Spirit is inside all of these elements and makes up the space each one of them lacks in. It is often represented with a circle, and this symbolizes the infinity of the spirit and how it is all things. It is also represented in the pentagram as the apex point of the star. In masonry, we are caused to kneel at an altar and give prayer. The volume of sacred law is also in the middle of the lodge as a rule and guide for us as masons. This is fittingly so, as it represents the place our spirit is. Our sight is taken away from us until a certain point, and then, as mentioned before, the hoodwink is removed for us to see the light. The element of quintessence has all of the features of the other elements. It is very logical and intelligent, as with air, yet as simple and grounded as the earth. It is very emotional and soft as water, yet powerful and scorching as fire. It is highly represented in masonry, but rarely, if ever, talked about. It is the light we are constantly looking for. Practical Freemasonry. The study of the aforementioned and our craft is not exclusive to Blue Lodge and can be explored via many avenues. Much literature has been written about the subject and can be interpreted in an endless amount of ways. Also, much of what we learn is obtained from within through meditation and self-study. There are many Masonic appendant or concordant bodies that subscribe to these schools of thought, as well as non-Masonic bodies that are considered more fringe masonry, but have just as much value as actual Masonic institutions. Incorporating elements, senses, and sciences into our daily lives can further shape our ashlars into that perfect stone that we are striving to have. Brother J. Clint Louis lives in the greater Rochester, New York area and is a fourth-generation Freemason. On the 17th of March 2015, he was raised to the sublime degree of a Master Mason at Edmond Lodge 37 in Edmond, Oklahoma. Brother Clint is currently a member of Fairport Flower City Lodge 476, Hiram Royal Arch Chapter Number 62, and the SRICF New York College in Buffalo. He is allowed to divide his working hours serving veterans in crisis at the Canandaigua, New York VAMC, as well as serving his country in the military as a reservist. Brother Louis is happily married with two younger children. So that's that piece. I just have to say, wow, it's not often we get somebody who has put together a paper that talks about some of these deeper concepts contained within the symbols. And I very much just appreciated his ability to tie the senses with the elements. And there's even pieces of little gems of hermetic science, you know, peppered throughout this piece. Brother Clint, thank you so much for allowing us to read this one, The Five Elements and Five Sciences. Brother Jay Clint Louie, and he's up there in New York. I think we're going to try to publish it on the Midnight Freemasons 2 here in just a little while. But for the listeners of this show, you guys get it first. All right, let's hear from illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison for this week's Masonic Minute.
When you have a little time, give a listen to Whence Came You podcast, number 343. Scott Hambrick, a member of Owasso Lodge 545 in Oklahoma, was Robert Johnson's guest on the show. Brother Hambrick is a founder of the Intellectual Linear Progression Program, which he describes as an online community developing classically educated men and women using the great books of Western civilization. With a decided preference for hard copy books, Scott said something on the program that, well, here's an excerpt. Listen for yourself.
One of the reasons I started this project is because I'm desperately afraid that we're one EMP, or one electromagnetic pulse away from losing civilization, you know?
It doesn't take much, man. If you do the research on what that is, I mean, it's kind of scary to think about how little it would take.
Yep, it's awful. And so, you know, when we read Plato at onlinegreatbooks.com, I sent everybody the Hackett hardback edition, you know, complete Plato. I'm like the Gideons. I want every house in America to have an acid-free copy of the complete works of Plato. We've got to keep the lights on. I'm worried about it.
This discussion brought to mind some of the resistance offered when I was an officer in the Missouri Lodge of Research. We worked for a few years to establish the Masonic Library in Columbia. One of the arguments against going to that expense was this: we don't need books anymore. Everything is electronic these days. Books are old-fashioned and unnecessary in this so-called modern age. I love technology. It was my profession. But with very little reservation, I have a message for the world. Don't abandon paper. In fact, along with that, don't abandon any of the so-called old-time analog archiving techniques. I mean it. Most things today should be digital, but not exclusively. Why? There are lots of reasons not to turn every document or historical item into a string of ones and zeros. But there are a couple of really compelling ones. First, you've got to have the technology to use the technology. I have a boatload of old floppy disks around the house, not just the modern 3.5-inch ones, not just the older 5.25-inch floppies, but the ancient 8-inchers. Try to find a way to read those bad boys today. They're obsolete. They don't even make good frisbees. Think that's going back a bit far? You think your CDs are safe? Studies have shown the average life of a homemade CD is about 25 years, and a professional CD about 100 years. And who knows if 100 years from now there will be a machine that can read a CD. 1,000 years? The solution? A good old-fashioned record player. Really? As you listen to this podcast, the little Voyager spacecraft has oozed its way out of our solar system into interstellar space. Know what's on board in case it encounters any extraterrestrials? Not a CD. Not floppies, not tape, not an SD card, but a record and record player with pictorial instructions on how to use it. ET probably won't have CDs, but he'll be able to operate that simple gadget. You might agree, but claim that's a really special case. And besides, there are no ETs around here. Well, probably not. But guess what? the official sound recording media of our very own Library of Congress, uses 78 RPM records. Space Age vinyl, 78 RPM records, to be sure. But still, Thomas Edison would be proud of us. And naturally, original documents and books are the Library of Congress's official hard copy storage media. That brings us to the other big reason, the aforementioned EMP that Scott and Robert talked about. Even if we do have the technology to read all this digital material, a single coronal mass ejection, CME, from the sun, or, God forbid, a similar event caused by a nuclear war, could wipe it all out in a single instant. Granted, if we ever have a disaster of that magnitude, our biggest problem wouldn't be whether or not we had last year's copies of the Short Talk Bulletin. Still, if we could survive such a disaster, in the long run, it would be nice to have our historical documents. Hence, paper, vinyl, and analog copies would be mighty handy. That's why the Library of Congress is making sure we keep them around. We all should, with both our personal and public treasures. Oh, and by the way, such an EMP episode already happened. Known as the Carrington event, a major CME hit the Earth in September of 1859. The only reason it didn't fry every iPad on Earth is there weren't any of them around back then. More recently, a small CME in 1989 brought Hydro-Quebec's electricity transmission system to its knees. It can and will happen. Guaranteed. Let's be optimistic and assume there won't be a nuclear war. Doesn't matter. The next coronal mass ejection is right around the corner. So let's keep pumping out those paper copies. Luddites of the world, unite. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right. As always, what an amazing job illustrious Brother Steve does for us. Thank you so much, Brother Steve, for continuing to bring these great segments to this program. Over 100 episodes of this are available, guys. If you go to our YouTube channel, subscribe there, and you'll get every episode of Whence Came You. You'll get a notification when those come out, as well as any other videos that we put out. And I don't know if you know, you probably do, but Steve has little video clips that he releases along with these, and we put those on our YouTube channel as well. So one thing that's really great is you have the ability to put together a list or a playlist of these different Masonic Minutes. And I know of lodges that play these things at their open houses or at their Christmas parties or whatever, because what it does is it makes the Masons there feel awesome hearing these great stories and they're interested, but also they're really good recruitment tools if you're into that. You know, I'm not a big recruiter. I very much believe in the idea that if you search it out and it seems like something you want, then you'll go for it. And that's probably what you should be doing. But if it has that effect, I'm all about it. So check those out. Check out Illustrious Brother Steve's books as well. You can find those at the bookstore. You can click through our website to get there, wcypodcast.com. All right, now let's hear this really cool recording that Brother Jamie Paul Lamb did for us just this week. Fresh, just for you guys.
on the origin and development of the seven liberal arts and sciences. As is stated in Preston's Illustrations of Masonry, 1772, the study of the liberal arts, that valuable branch of education which tends so effectually to polish and adorn the mind, is earnestly recommended to your consideration, especially the science of geometry, which is established as the basis of our art. Geometry, or masonry, originally synonymous terms, is of a divine and moral nature, and enriched with the most useful knowledge. While it proves the wonderful properties of nature, it demonstrates the more important truths of morality. The seven liberal arts and sciences comprise the standard academic curriculum in the universities of the late medieval period of the 12th and 13th centuries CE, with the emphasis being on the development of a classical education. This pedagogical schema, which was taught exclusively in Latin, was termed the Artes Liberalis, or free arts, and were undertaken in the pursuit of developing a reference point in the sciences with the goal of segueing into the disciplines of philosophy and theology. The marriage of religion and reason was the principal aim of the Neo-Aristotelian philosophy of scholasticism, which refined the seven liberal arts in their medieval form. The Artes Liberalis were in contrast to the Artes Illiberalis, which were suited more towards trade-oriented vocational ends. The term free, in this sense, is in reference to the curriculum's accessibility by those independent pupils who were often of noble birth, whereas the mechanical arts were studied and practiced by the common man for largely economic reasons. The liberal arts were essentially a preparation for one to actively and intelligently take part in civic life. Innumerable innovations and contributions to the arts, sciences, and Western culture in general may be traced to this program. Even to the present day, its sequence, as prescribed on the winding staircase of the Fellowcraft lecture, stands as an unparalleled curriculum for personal growth and betterment, leading the contemplative Mason to the very pinnacle of the physical sciences and at the doorstep of the metaphysical arts. The concept of a formalized curriculum has its origins in the late classical, early Hellenistic period of Greece, with the development of a system known as the Encucleos Paedia, which means circular learning and is the origin of the English encyclopedia. The Encucleos Paedia was specifically designed to rear the ideal member of the polis, or city-state, through a well-rounded syllabus. This curriculum was relatively broad when compared to later liberal arts programs, in that it included theory and praxis in such diverse disciplines as poetry, mathematics, medicine, gymnastics, wrestling, and social etiquette. The impetus for the development of such a program is thought to have stemmed from the Greeks' collective desire to cultivate an appreciation for the kalos kagathos and a general sense of arete in the citizenry. The early classical idea of kalos kagathos, which is the Greek for beautiful and good, as documented in Herodotus, has been described as the chivalrous ideal of the complete human personality, harmonious in mind and body, foursquare in battle and speech, song and action. The initial Homeric concept of arete was considered the highest virtue and may be generally described as personal excellence and living up to one's fullest potential. The cultivation of arete was said to be the central driving force in Greek culture. Consequently, the importance of the influence of this concept vis-a-vis the formation of Western civilization cannot be overstated. Though their exact sequence and subject inclusion varied throughout the classical Roman period, the seven liberal arts appeared in something very close to their canonical form in the early 5th century CE, in the work of Martianus Capella. Capella's work on the marriage of Mercury and philology, which was also called De Septem Disciplinis, or the Seven Disciplines, is a metaphor-laden prose work describing the allegorical wedding of Mercury, who represents intellectuality and industriousness, and Philologia, who represents the language arts and was immortalized by the Muses, cardinal virtues, and the Graces. In the narrative, there are seven servant maidens among the wedding gifts who are given to Philologia. These maidens are personifications of the seven liberal arts and sciences and are individually introduced as such, much in the manner as they are sequentially introduced in the Masonic Fellowcraft lecture. Interestingly, the eighth book of the marriage describes a geocentric cosmological model in which Earth, at the center, is orbited by Luna, Sol, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, and the fixed stars, while Mercury and Venus orbit the Sun in their own epicycles. This may have been Capella's way of correcting for the retrograde motion of these planets, since their orbits are concentrically inside that of the Earth. In any case, the observations documented in the astronomical eighth book of the marriage were specifically mentioned and praised by Nicholas Copernicus in his De Revolutionibus Orbium Coelestium, the famed astronomer's seminal work on the heliocentric theory. Capella's work, which was a distillation of the preceding classical Greek and Roman curricula, was widely read, taught, and commented upon throughout the Middle Ages and well into the Renaissance. By pursuing a classical education, such as the seven liberal arts and sciences, in the prescribed sequence, one begins from the very basic units of learning, i.e., how to absorb literature and oration, and how to form, write, and communicate coherent thoughts, and utilizes these ideas in the further pursuit to the loftiest heights of the physical sciences. But the caveat is that it is only by the laying of a level foundation built upon those universal principles which are the condition of the possibility of the existence of anything and everything that one may erect a sound edifice of substance and learning. This metaphorical edifice, whose ashlars represent the practical and theoretical knowledge gleaned from a thorough study of the arts and sciences, is only then capable of effectively housing the loftier subjects of philosophy and theology, which, being metaphysical in essence, constitute the apex of human wisdom. For if the final step of the winding staircase represents astronomy, which we now call astrophysics, the apex of the physical sciences, then what lays beyond must be metaphysical or beyond physical. But the pursuit of this knowledge must begin with first principles. In Western thought, we find the concept of the first principles spanning as far back as the Socratic paradox, I know that I know nothing, and later in the Renaissance in Descartes' epistemology. To this end, the curricular sequence of the Septivium, or Seven Ways, was devised. This was further divided into the Trivium and Quadrivium. We read in Enfield's History of Philosophy, these seven heads were supposed to include universal knowledge. He who was master of these was thought to have no need of a preceptor to explain any books or to solve any questions which lay within the compass of human reason, the knowledge of the Trivium having furnished him with the key to all language, and that of the Quadrivium having opened to him the secret laws of nature. The Trivium, Latin for three ways, also known as the Artes Semicanalis, or language arts, consisted of grammar, rhetoric, and logic, or dialectic. These three subjects were considered the preliminary education necessary to move on to the loftier subjects dealt with in the Quadrivium, hence the English word trivia. This is not to imply that the subjects enumerated in the Trivium were at all trivial in the modern sense, for these were the very building blocks with which the student laid a foundation of future knowledge. Mastery of the subjects under the rubric of the Trivium equipped the student with the skills necessary for effectively digesting literature, a capacity for critical thought, the ability to persuade through discourse, the ability to recognize and circumvent logical fallacies, and the ability to compose compelling arguments and hypotheses. These were indispensable skills for those wishing to move on to the mathematical and physical sciences. A relatively succinct definition of the scope of the trivium was posited by Sister Miriam Joseph as follows. Grammar is the art of inventing symbols and combining them to express thought. Logic is the art of thinking, and rhetoric is the art of communicating thought from one mind to another, the adaptation of language to circumstance. The quadrivium, Latin for four ways, or artis physicae, consisted of the study of arithmetic, geometry, music, and astronomy. The term was said to have been coined by the Roman senator Anicius Manlius Servanius Beefius, though the first known appearance of this quartet as the curriculum may be found in the seventh book of Plato's Republic, wherein they appear in the sequence arithmetic, geometry, astronomy, and music. Meant to be studied after the completion of the trivium, the quadrivium is a sequentially ordered curriculum dealing with abstract, spatial, and temporal mathematics. In the quadrivium, we see the development of the student's capacity for abstract thought through number. That's arithmetic. The application of these principles into three-dimensional space, geometry. The expansion of these same organizational principles in time, music, and their ultimate extrapolation in space-time, astronomy. This fourfold developmental model is similar to that which was represented by the Tetractus of the Pythagoreans, which taught the unfolding of three-dimensional space, the uppermost point having position but no magnitude, the two points beneath it representing a line and thereby duality. The next course of three points representing those needed to construct a plane having width and length, but no height. And the four points beneath it representing the nodes of the simplest three-dimensional Platonic solid, the tetrahedron. This correlation was not lost on the ancient cult. We read in Proclus, a commentary on the first book of Euclid's Elements, the Pythagoreans considered all mathematical science to be divided into four parts. One half they marked off as concerned with quantity, the other half with magnitude, and each of these they posited as twofold. A quantity can be considered in regard to its character by itself or in its relation to another quantity, magnitudes as either stationary or in motion. Arithmetic, then, studies quantities as such. Music, the relations between quantities, geometry, magnitude at rest, spherics, magnitude inherently moving.
Wow. All right. How about that? How fantastic. If you want to get a hold of Jamie Paul Lamb, go to MasonicInstruction.com and go ahead and scroll down until you see Jamie Paul Lamb's bio. You can click on that. And while there, you can see some of his presentations and other works. His website, anything pertaining to him is there, but also a way to directly get in touch with him, which is especially important if you want to have him out and come do a talk at your lodge. Now, there's a bunch of speakers on MasonicInstruction.com. It's just a little website I put together. I don't charge anything. I don't get any of the emails you send these people. These are just direct forwards that go right to the speakers so that you can book them direct. It's just a cool place to put everybody so you know where to go to find somebody. It's like a national worldwide speakers bureau, if you will. So I hope you guys find value in that. If you're an amazing lecturer, you give talks, and people really enjoy your stuff, I would invite you to get in touch with me, and we'll get you up there as long as you've got a couple great lectures that you'd be willing to put up there and that you'd be willing to list and do some traveling. So that is it for this week. I hope you enjoyed. I had a wonderful time bringing you the program this week. Even though I'm still doing this weird workaround where I'm recording the show on one computer and mastering it on another, thanks, Mac. Thanks, Apple. But it's the way it goes, the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. I guess we just got to do what we have to do to make sure that this thing gets out there. We have people who are supporting this program, and to you all, I am eternally grateful. So if you are a producer, a contributor, or a fellow of this program, thank you so much. You can assist this program by checking out the show on Patreon, or you can use PayPal, and consider a recurring monthly donation. We have a $2 contributor level, a $5 a month fellow level, and a $10 a month producer level. If you are a contributor, I will put your name on the website. If you are a fellow, I will do the same thing, and I will send you a personalized thank you card. And if you are a producer of this program, I will send you a producer's pin as well as a thank you card, and your name goes on the website. So you get all those other benefits. And they're available to you regardless of whether you use PayPal subscription models or if you go to our Patreon page. So either one is available for you because you asked for them, and that's how we primarily support this program, is through your monthly donations. And if you feel like giving a one-time gift, that is also appreciated. We have that available also. Just check our website out, wcypodcast.com. And last but not least, on the website also, we have our producer's pins for sale if you'd like to make a one-time donation plus shipping. Check it all out there again, wcypodcast.com. Midnight Freemasons posting 3 articles every single week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. This last week, we had a heck of a good run. We had some great pieces up there, especially the one that we ran the day before Halloween. Yeah, fantastic. Haunted Masonry, I can tell you the story he tells in that happened. I was there. And no, I don't walk around with a full-blown ghost hunting kit. I have an app on my phone. It's cool. Last but not least, don't forget about the Masonic Roundtable going live every Thursday at 9:30, 8:30 Central. Except this last Thursday, because, you know, it's Halloween and we got kids. I think between all of the guys on the Masonic Roundtable, Mike's kid is grown up. But the rest of us, let's see, I have 4, John's got 4, that's 8, Juan has 2, that's 10, and Jason has 1, that's 11. We have 11 kids between the 4 of us. 5, well, that's 12. We got 12 kids. So we were busy with trick-or-treating and all of that, even though it's snowing here. So that's it for this week. I hope you enjoyed again. Thank you so much. Thanks for going over to Patreon. Thanks for supporting us through PayPal, however you choose to do that. Thanks for coming back week after week. That's it. So until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Stay on the level. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.